Hello, and welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I am the host of this talk show on travel. And of course, I often talk about fashion, style, beauty, shopping, all those wonderful aspects of travel. And I have a special guest in the studio. This is somebody that I have known for quite some time. Her name is Kate Betts, and that byline might be familiar to some of you. Kate has been a fashion editor for leading publications such as Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, New York Times, Time Magazine. And yes, she is a fashion-forward lady. Actually, we originally met many years ago. I don't know whether I want to do the count in my head, in Paris when we were both living there. And Kate is here on vacation in Telluride, so I thought I'd snatch some of her time and to have an interview with me. I'd like to welcome Kate Betts to Travel Fun. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. And I thought that this would be a fun occasion for us to talk about style and travel.
And to give my knees a break.
And to give your knees a break from all of our wonderful skiing that we have here. But, you know, style and travel go together like food and wine, don't they?
They really do. And one of the things that I always used to struggle with a lot, and sometimes I still struggle with it when I travel, is you get to a destination, no matter how exotic or familiar, and you always feel like you have the wrong clothing. And it's a little easier when you're coming to a place like Telluride because you have the ski clothes, obviously, and equipment that you need for the slopes. But then there's always the après-ski moment. There is also the argument that it doesn't really matter what you wear in a place like Telluride, but I would argue that it always matters. You know, style matters. It matters what you look like. It matters how you feel about yourself. It matters how you present yourself. And one of the things I've learned from traveling around the world, anywhere from, you know, covering the shows in Paris and Milan and London to coming here on vacation with my family, is I always try to visualize myself in the place beforehand. And how am I going to feel wearing something? How am I going to feel, you know, walking down Main Street in Telluride? Well, I'm not going to feel great if, you know, I'm wearing high heels. So obviously I'm not going to bring the high heels to Telluride. Or, you know, what am I going to feel comfortable in? And so even if I'm going to Paris on business and I know I have a lot of dinner parties I have to go to or fashion shows or whatever, I try to visualize what I would be feeling the most comfortable and the best in that destination. And it's a hard thing to do, but it really helps, I think, because otherwise I end up throwing my whole closet into the suitcase and that's, you know.
That's a great approach, and visualization, I think, is an important tool with anything and everything. Do you think that you're thinking more about what the locals are wearing or what the people that you will be associating with, how they will be dressed? For example, if you're going to Paris, are you thinking about the whole Parisian look and you're going to maybe adapt your look and look perhaps a little less New York, a little bit more Paris?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you think about a place like Paris, it's a lot more formal, the culture there, as you know, since you live there. And it's so you think about that and you think, okay, I have to be a little dressier there than maybe I would be in New York or in Telluride or, you know, Chicago or San Francisco. So, and you know that if there's an event like a dinner or something, you are kind of expected to dress up a little bit more than you might or go to a restaurant than you might in another city. So in that sense, yeah, you are thinking about the locals. And in Telluride, you're thinking about feeling good about yourself and feeling comfortable and, you know, and being able to combat the elements. and you know, skiing, having all the right equipment for skiing, having the right boots for the snow. Of course, this happens every time we come here. My son arrives with like some pair of old sneakers and, you know, they're trashed immediately and soaking wet and we have to buy him another pair of boots. So those kind of things, yeah. I think about the locals.
And how much does makeup come into that? Because in Telluride, that was one thing that I had a hard time getting used to when I first came to Telluride, and particularly becoming a ski instructor. The idea of going out, and yes, there are times where you don't have a stitch of makeup on, or maybe a little bit of light powder and a gloss, but I had never done that before.
Right. I know.
To that extent.
It's kind of shocking. I was thinking about that on my way over here because I did put some makeup on. And
Wow-sy.
I thought, wait, Wow-sy. Not very many people around here wear very much makeup. And I never wear any makeup when I ski.
It's more permissible.
Okay. Well, I never wear makeup when I ski because I have so much sunscreen on my face. And today I actually ran into somebody from New York, an old friend of mine who I haven't seen in like 10 years. And I don't think he recognized me because I was so sunburned and, you know, dazed and confused. But one of the things, if there's one beauty tip that I've learned about Colorado and Telluride, it's the dryness. I mean, I come from the East Coast, so I'm not used to it. And, you know, on the market these days, you find all these really expensive creams and everything promises to, you know, hydrate the best or whatever. And I always go back to the good old Elizabeth Arden 8-hour cream, which I always bring like a giant tube of it. And I use it everywhere. I use it on my eyelids, on my face, on my hands, on my feet, everywhere. And it's like all purpose. Sometimes I even put it in my hair. I know that sounds really weird, but
no,
it gets really
all.
So dry.
Not
here.
At all. The Elizabeth Arden 8-hour cream. I've never heard of that before.
And it's cheap. It's only like $10 for a tube.
So let's talk about fashion and style and travel. Okay. When you go to pack your suitcase, you must have some sort of a ritual after you've visualized how you see yourself in this place or how you want to see yourself. Then what do you do? Do you start out with a core wardrobe and then add a bunch of accessories or?
Well, you know, it depends on where I'm going. I mean, if we're talking about Paris or Milan or, you know, some foreign place where I'm going to be working a lot in the fashion circuit, you do have to kind of think it through really carefully because there are a lot of different venues that you have to be dressed for. And so I always need, I mean, you know, I always go back to basic black, but you always have a core wardrobe and then, yeah, a lot of accessories or jacket or something that you can wear in two or three different settings. Like it could be something that could be dressed up for dinner or you could wear it during the day as a suit. I don't know. You get pretty good at building a kind of flexible wardrobe.
Okay. I really want the scoop here. And since you are a mover and shaker in the fashion world, and you go to these different fashion shows and all kinds of different events, you live in New York, and all of this weight that goes with it, you can't just show up and wear something that, this feels good, I'm just going to wear it. Do you have in the back of your mind, this is in fashion this season, or this is the latest greatest, but it's, you know, not the in fashion here, it's working in New York. I mean, what's the thought process there? I mean, are fashion editors hung up on what they wear? That's what I really want to
know. Well, a lot of fashion editors are obsessed with fashion. So yes, they are, and they always want to have the latest and the newest and the greatest.
Kind of like what we saw in The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, I mean, they want the newest thing. They're obsessed about the latest shoe or the latest bag. And so yes, they are very hung up on it. But, you know, also, this goes back to one of the questions that always haunts me about fashion is the difference between fashion and style. You know, somebody who's into fashion or who's a fashion icon or a fashion victim is somebody who really follows the crowd, who wants to fit in, who wants to have the newest bag, the newest shoe, who wants to look like what they're supposed to look like. And somebody who has style goes, you know, follows their own beat and usually always looks the same or always wears the same thing. I mean, when you think of great style icons of cinema and of American culture, you know, when you think of Katharine Hepburn or Lauren Bacall or Audrey Hepburn, they were always wearing the same thing. And that's what made them stand out because they didn't look like the rest of the crowd. So I think it's...
And would you call that timeless elegance?
Yeah. I mean, I call it style. You know, knowing what looks good on you, knowing what you want to project, the message you want to project on the world, the what you want to say with how you appear. And some people don't really know, so they follow fashion.
Okay, so I'm thinking that some of the gems I have in my closet that I've had for 10 years or more, that they can still be very much in style, because I'm still wearing things that I've had from actually even when I lived in Paris many years ago.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if there are things that you feel represent your taste and your what you feel comfortable in and your style, then yeah. And if you can still fit into that, more power to you.
There you go. All right. Okay, so travel tips for... you said you had a special travel tip or fashion tip for travelers that you want to share.
Well, one of the most important things I think always with travel is comfort and layering. And so I always bring a lot of things that you can layer and take off, like on an airplane. I never bring like a really heavy coat, because I feel like you're sitting around in an airplane and or you're in an airport. And so I usually wear layers, like a t-shirt and a sweater and another cardigan over it and then a light coat. And I always have a scarf, because it's something that you can use to, you know, if you're cold, you can wrap it around your neck and it can make you warmer. You can use it as a sort of shawl or a blanket. But I think the layering thing is key. And I know I've done so many stories on this. And every time you ask a fashion designer who travels all the time, you know, to Asia or to Milan or Paris, back and forth, they always say the same thing. They always say layering. So I think that's really the secret, and comfort, you know. I see some of these pictures of like celebrities getting off airplanes at LAX, you know, the LA airport, and they're wearing these platform high heels and tight jeans and these ridiculous clothes. And I just don't really understand how they could possibly
handbag.
Yeah. How they could travel like that. But
that's an excellent point. I am visiting with Kate Betts, style editor, writer extraordinaire. Your biggest, most recent project is really exciting. I called it the biggest. Was that a slip, or could it be? It's the first time you've done a book.
It's my
so
first
many
book.
Incredible articles for Vogue and New York Times, Harper's Bazaar. But you have written a book about Michelle Obama, and that is coming out in February 2011. We are going to take a short break and come back and talk about that book, Michelle Obama, The Power of Style. Welcome back to Travel Fun. I am visiting with Kate Betts, fashion writer extraordinaire. I have to say that you're laughing, but I mean, my God, this is almost like having Anna Wintour here in the Kodo Studios. You did work closely with her.
I did. At Vogue.
What was your position there again?
I was the fashion news director of Vogue for 8 years.
And you worked very hard. I remember that time. And you've also, you're a contributing editor for Time Magazine and Harper's Bazaar. And your latest project is about Michelle Obama. And that's a book and entitled Michelle Obama, The Power of Style.
Yes. It's actually a book about, I mean, when I talk about the book, I have to preface this by saying this is probably the first interview I've ever done about the book, Mary Beth. So you've got the scoop.
It's making it real.
Yeah. When I tell people about it, it is about Michelle Obama's style, but it's really a bigger theme, which is the difference between fashion and style and why style matters. And she's kind of the lens for that because, believe it or not, even though we never hear her speak about style, and in the first year she was in the White House, we never really heard her speak at all, she spoke through her style. She used her image to get people's attention and to set the tone for her husband's presidency and to kind of, I think, in many ways reassure people that she was not going to be coming into the position, which is a very important and powerful and psychologically powerful position, you know, with a lot of personal ambition, because the First Lady of the United States is, you know, a position that people expect to be a caretaker of the White House and of the presidency. They don't want necessarily somebody who is going to be ambitious in their own right. And in many ways, I think she learned the lesson from Hillary Clinton. But, you know, in many ways, she's very similar to Hillary Clinton. And so she has this incredible education and this incredible professional career. And that can be very intimidating to people. And so I think she, in many ways, she used style to kind of say, this is who I am, and very straightforward. She obviously loves fashion. She has a fluency in fashion that we haven't really seen in a first lady probably since Jackie Kennedy, although a very different kind of fluency in fashion. She's much more casual, and we live in a much more casual society now. But I think her style and the way she has used style to kind of set the tone has been very powerful for women, and especially for working mothers, for women who are kind of juggling careers, juggling responsibilities at home. And she kind of has very quickly become this post-feminist kind of icon. Of, you know, you can wear what you want, you can stand out in the White House, you can run across the South Lawn barefoot and jump over hurdles, as she did at one special presentation she did for her Healthy Kids campaign last October. And, you know, she has a very strong voice that way. And her voice has been through her style.
Do you think it's largely her versatility that appeals to so many people, that she can be incredibly glamorous and be the quintessential first lady in a ball gown at a state dinner or the inaugural ball comes to mind or whatever. And you can also see her out gardening or at a garden event at the White House. Is it the versatility that
I think
most
it is
striking?
I think it is very striking, but I think what people really respond to about her, and when you're talking about the range and the versatility, and from going to wearing jeans and a cardigan to wearing a ball gown, I think that's a very American thing, you know. And she is the quintessential American woman. She also happens to be the first African American First Lady of the United States, but she is first and foremost, I think, a quintessential American woman. And I think that's really amazing. You know, she's very athletic. She's in great shape. She's, you know, self-made. She has this incredible, real, down-to-earth kind of approach to everything. And when I first, what really first struck me about her was, here was this African-American woman who was coming to the White House. She's 5'11". She's, you know, looks like a supermodel. She's really the first first lady to stand shoulder to shoulder with her husband. I mean, you could probably say Hillary Clinton also, but she wasn't coming to the White House in quite as a historical way. And I think, you know, Michelle Obama is so, she's could have chosen the path where she just fit into the Washington establishment, you know, and just sort of put on what I call the blue shantung suit, you know, the pale blue suit and the dowdy heels and blend it into that landscape. But she didn't, you know, she chose her own path and she just went for it and wears what she wants to wear. And I really think that she's dressing for herself. She's not dressing for the job.
And does she have a whole group of people consulting with her for, you know, saying that she must have a number of stylists that she works with?
Well, she does buy a lot of her clothes through one retailer from Chicago, who she's bought clothes from that particular retailer before she got to the White House. And so I think there's a familiarity and a comfort level there. And that retailer happens to be somebody who really does dress women to, you know, for themselves, so they feel comfortable. She's not trying to push fashion or, you know, push them into something that's not really appropriate for them. So I think there is a comfort level there. But I think she chooses, you know, for the research for this book, I went back and interviewed a lot of her friends from Princeton, way back from college, and they all said the same thing. They all said that she has always had the same style, and she's always been very consistent.
That's interesting. I was wondering whether it was something that was sort of newly acquired, but it makes sense that she would always have had that.
Yeah, I think it's something,
that's,
you know,
her
you
core
lived
being.
You lived in Paris, you know the French, you know the Europeans. I mean, you know, style is something you have within you or you don't, you know, and I think she has it. I think that it's funny because one of the themes of the book is also, and one of the things that I was really struck by with her is that she does not treat style and substance as two separate paths that you have to choose one. And I think a lot of our approach in America to style has been one of, you know, if you pay too much attention to your appearance and how you look and your style, then you're, you know, not taking yourself seriously intellectually, and, you know, it's frivolous to pay attention to that kind of thing. And I think that in many ways, she's really the first lady who has synthesized style and substance. I mean, she's very smart. She's incredibly successful and incredibly accomplished. And she's there and, you know, unapologetically embracing fashion. And this is who I am. And this is what I enjoy. And, you know, one is not going to undermine the other. So I think that's really new for us. I think it's a very European idea. And I think in, you know, in my travels in Europe, I've always spoken to people about this. And they always say, you know, style is something that you have within you. And it's part of your expression, just like your intellect is your expression or your emotions or your expression. It's all one of the same thing.
And how does one acquire style? You say you have it within you, and I think we all have a sense of our own style. But if somebody is still sort of searching for that style, how do you acquire that? Is it possible?
Well, I think, you know, we look to icons of style. We look to people in movies. We look to people in more and more, I think, on television. And to maybe fashion designers. But I think ultimately it's something that you find within yourself. I think it's something that you have to find your comfort level, you know. I mean, I'm sure everybody has a memory or a story about some like hideous outfit that they wore that they thought was really stylish and that, you know, looked horrible on them or made them feel weird or out of place or stupid, you know. And so everybody knows what their style is. It's just a question of expressing it. It's funny because in the book, when in my research, I came across a story about Hillary Clinton. When she first got to the White House, she went up to New York and met with Jackie Kennedy Onassis, and had lunch with her and was asking her for tips about the White House, and most of which were about raising a child in the White House. And at the end of the conversation, she asked her, you know, what should I do about my wardrobe? Should I hire a stylist, or who should I get to tell me what to wear? And Jackie was kind of horrified and said, nobody can tell you what to wear. You have to be yourself.
Oh, that's great.
And I think that's true. You know, I think that's, you know, said by a true icon.
Exactly. Otherwise, you're not being authentic.
Yeah.
And that would come across.
Yeah. And there's another quote that I came across when I was researching the book from Karl Lagerfeld, who's, as you know, a famous designer, that's something along the lines of, you know, you can use fashion to hide, but it's only really fabulous and glorious if you use it to say and express who you really are.
I like that. Excellent. I'm visiting with Kate Batts. And Kate, I have to ask you, did you have the opportunity to meet Michelle Obama?
I did.
You did. Tell us briefly about that.
I met her at the Time 100 dinner last May. For Time Magazine, May 2009. And she was one of the people honored on the list of 100 most influential people. And she actually spoke at the dinner. And so I was able to meet her there. And then I also followed her around.
Is that when she learned that you were writing this book about her?
No, she knew about the book before that. Mm-hmm. But and I followed her around in the White House pool, you know, in the press pool. So I got a lot of exposure to her, which was cool.
Anything to say about that experience?
Well, I have to say, I mean, I've observed her a lot in action in the White House, in action at places like the Time 100 dinner. And she's just incredibly charismatic. I mean, I don't know whether it's because she's so tall or just because she's so charismatic that when you see her next to her husband, who's also very charismatic, obviously, she almost looks, you know, more charismatic than he does. She just has an incredible presence. And I used to say, I remember going to the White House when the Clintons were there and seeing Hillary and Bill Clinton, and they were both, you know, incredibly charismatic too. And he had this kind of shiny aura around him. And that's what I saw with Michelle too. She's kind of the shiny one.
Okay, that makes sense. And it's nice that she enhances that with all of the gorgeous colors that she wears.
Yeah,
she's very beautiful. Much into color. I like that. I am visiting with Kate Batts. Kate is in town skiing. She loves Telluride and from New York. And I'm just thrilled to have her here because she does know so much about style, fashion and style. Kate, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, I can't. I mean, we've really covered the waterfront here, haven't we?
Have.
Although there is no waterfront in Telluride, so that's not actually a good expression to use. Sorry. I think the altitude is still getting to me.
We have a little river here that is quite picturesque. So
that's true.
Yes, the river walk is wonderful. Well, I am going to post this on my blog as a podcast. And Kate, I hope you'll grace me with a picture of yourself.
I will. I'll dig one up.
Not
on the not a skiing picture though.
Last time we did an interview, it was very hard getting a picture of you, of yourself. So I hope this time it'll be a little bit easier. And that's at bonjourcolorado.com. Kate, thanks for carving out time to come into the Kodo Studios.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
Take care. Bye bye.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on, fly with me, we'll float down in the blues.